This is Brass Tack Sunday, coming to you in association with Williams Industries Incorporated. Today the subject is cancer cure in Barbados. On the line, we come back to Dr. Juliet Daniel. We thought we had contact with her earlier, but didn't. But I'm assured that she's on the line now. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Hello.
Well, welcome, Dr. Daniel. We've been having this discussion here in the studio with a number of people, specialists in the field of medicine, in Dr. Ferdinand, Selwyn Ferdinand. We've also we also have with us Dr. Cambridge Maxwell, Deanne Sobers from the Barbados Palliative Association, the Barbados Association of Palliative Care, and Ed Clark, Executive Vice President and General Manager of Barbados Operations with Sagicor Life. On the line also we had earlier, and we expect that she may return, is this country's Education Minister, Cynthia Bradshaw, who a week ago announced that she is fighting breast cancer. From where you sit in Canada, a respected researcher, we wanted to get your sense of where do you see Barbados right now in the fight against cancer when it comes to the kind of technology that is available out there? And where is the research taking us? Your overview.
Okay. So first I want to say thank you for inviting me to participate in this discussion. And I'm really sorry I missed the first half of the discussion. I think this is a great opportunity for Barbados to move forward and to be involved in a lot of the research that's going on worldwide regarding cancer, in particular in people of African ancestry. There's a huge interest worldwide, especially in the USA, regarding the or acknowledging that there are significant differences in the incidence rates of different types of cancers in Black people, as well as the outcomes and survival rates of many Black people to cancer. And so there's a lot of research going on with that right now, and that's some of the research that my lab is focused on. As you know, we're looking at breast cancer in Black women. So I think there's a great opportunity for that. I think for Barbados, the big issue is going to be, I think, just raising awareness, educating everyone about this, and getting people really also committed to encouraging young adults to pursue careers in biomedical research and cancer research, because we need more hands on deck to tackle this problem.
So when you look at the incidence among Black people, what stands out?
So as I said, I'm focused mainly on breast cancer, so I'll speak mainly to that. But basically what many scientists and oncologists have now recognized is that there's one particular type of breast cancer, the triple negative breast cancer subtype, that's most prevalent in Black women relative to women of other races. And initially it was thought that this was due to socioeconomic status, but we know now that that's not completely the case. It's not just due to that, that there seems to be an underlying genetic predisposition. And that's what many labs, including mine, are trying to determine, is what is that underlying genetic predisposition. In West Africa, for example, the incidence of triple negative breast cancer ranges from 60 to 80% in Ghana and Nigeria. In the Caribbean, it's about 25%, and in North America, it's about 12%. So we really think there's this genetic predisposition linked to our African ancestors. And so if we could identify that genetic risk factor or cause, that would at a minimum help us to perhaps develop some kind of diagnostic screen for Black women to see whether they're at higher risk of developing triple negative breast cancer. And also, depending on what we identify as this genetic predisposition, we may be able to even develop not just a screening test, but some kind of drug that targets that alteration or genetic risk factor that's causing the incidence of breast cancer in Black women to be so much higher of that particular subtype. Black women actually have a lower incidence of breast cancer overall compared to white women, for example, but when we do get breast cancer, we get this more fatal triple negative breast cancer.
So we are still some distance away from being able to identify causes other than the genetics.
What do you mean causes?
Well, you said, we talked about factorial causes.
Yeah, but those factors could be genetic.
Yeah.
So I don't. It's hard to say because, as you may or may not know, in science, sometimes we think we're far away, and then there's a eureka moment where suddenly we've made a big discovery. So it's very hard to predict or to say that we're far away or we're close. It's literally, it's the more people working on this, the more people researching this, the sooner, quicker it is that we're going to actually identify that risk factor.
So what's the best that people can do when they have been afflicted by this type of disease?
By just breast cancer or triple negative breast cancer?
The triple negative breast cancer in particular.
Well, definitely make sure that you see your family doctor and then an oncologist as soon as possible to design a course of treatment. I'm sure Dr. Ferdinand has talked about this already. And come up with as aggressive a treatment as possible for the individual patient. And each patient is unique because it also will depend on their family history, their age, several other factors that will determine how well they respond to the therapies that are available and their survival rates. The unfortunate thing about triple negative breast cancer is there are no specific drugs that currently target or treat triple negative breast cancer. So the standard treatment would be chemotherapy and radiation therapy. However, for some women, that is enough and that works. So, but it's just, as I said, there's still a lot we don't know, and that's what many of us are working on. I was in online earlier, so I'm not sure what subtype of breast cancer Ms. Bradshaw has. Was that announced or commented
on? We didn't reveal that.
Okay.
We didn't reveal that. Any of the panelists who had any comments, any questions in relation to
I actually think it's an exciting area of research. The treatment of breast cancer is becoming more and more individualized per patient as we try to find more and more targeted treatments. So we've moved from the era where we had a principle of care that says, if you have this, you're going to get this kind of treatment and so on. We're now becoming far more individualized in our selections of treatments for each person. And in some persons, avoiding chemotherapy, for instance, rather than giving more chemotherapy. So the move towards identifying specific targets in the cancer that we can use treatments to get at is where we're moving. And that's exciting.
Yeah.
When you look at the incidence of triple negative breast cancer in the Caribbean, where does that rank in relation to the overall number of cancers, breast cancers that you're facing?
Overall types of breast cancer in the Caribbean?
Yeah.
So as I said, triple negative is approximately 25%.
25%. About a quarter. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Survival rate?
The survival rate, unfortunately, for triple negative is a lot lower because there are no specific treatments for triple negative breast cancer, and unfortunately, Black women tend to have poor outcomes than white women that are diagnosed with triple negative breast cancer. So that's something we're also trying to understand, is why that is the case. Like, that's another one of those unknown questions. So the challenge for Barbados and the Caribbean is, as was just alluded to, is that there's a real push towards what we call precision medicine or personalized medicine, where each individual patient will be given a specific treatment regimen that's unique to their genetic makeup. And unfortunately, that's very expensive. It's currently very expensive. It's being done in some hospitals in the U.S. and around the world. But that's a very, very expensive approach. So that's going to be a big challenge, I think, for Barbados and the Caribbean, because it's not going to be very accessible for many people, which is why we're hoping that, you know, we can find something else that will be a little bit more general, that would have more widespread impact on more people than just precision or personalized medicine that targets individuals.
And while you stay on the line, Dr. Daniel, we have Mrs. Angela Simpson, who is herself a survivor and is Honorary Secretary of the Barbados Cancer Society. Good afternoon.
Hi, good afternoon.
Yeah, well, how much of this program have you been able to hear so far?
Not much, unfortunately, because I'm down at Palm Beach and I brought the radio, but it wouldn't work down here.
Okay.
So unfortunately, I've not really heard much of that's gone on before. I would like to say, though, that the incidence of breast cancer in white women has been stable for several years, whereas it has been increasing slightly with Black women, and they have a higher propensity for getting breast cancer than any other race in the world. And where we are predominantly a black society in the Caribbean, I think, you know, we've been raising the awareness of it. And even in Barbados, we have not seen a greater increase in deaths per year from about 18 years ago, which means we're catching it earlier with women. Because when we started the breast screening program, that was to raise the awareness. And I actually am now working on prostate cancer for men, because a lot of people don't know this, but the gene for prostate cancer and breast cancer is the same. And if your father had prostate cancer, you're at a higher risk for breast cancer. And if your mother had breast cancer, your brother is at a higher risk for prostate cancer. And that is not actually a widely known fact. In my case, I had no one that I knew about in my family that had had breast cancer. But yet, about 7 years ago, I discovered that my grandfather, on his death certificate, had prostate cancer that he had died from. We never knew that. So even though it didn't come through my, it must have come through my mother, although she didn't have breast cancer. So they are certain little factors that I think we need to get out to the public a bit more on what you can do to be aware of this.
But you know that there are a lot of families in Barbados where people will tell you that as a child they don't know the family, the mother, the father's side of the family in particular.
That's true.
And then it really emphasizes the need to become as familiar with your family and your family history as possible.
And the cause of death of our older
And the
relatives.
Cause of death, yes.
Yes, absolutely. Well, I had breast cancer 20 years ago, and I went very, very public because I felt that, you know, if you have a bit of a profile, use it, because then it brought people out of the woodwork who thought that cancer was something that you had to be ashamed of. And I think that's why we have done so well with breast cancer here, because it's an ongoing thing. We started the October month with the pink ribbons. Right now I'm making pink ribbons at home for October. And, it's to get into the face of this. I've tried to do it with the men, but I've not got as good a response as I got with the women.
Perhaps you need somebody, a male figure, who would come forward.
Yes.
Somebody who has a very strong public profile.
Absolutely.
That may help. But in the meantime, it's hard slogging to get the men to take this thing seriously.
I mean, I've spoken to one of the Rotary clubs, and most of them who came up afterwards said, oh, yes, I go and get my PSA test done. I've spoken at the prison. I've spoken several places, and we have a polo tournament every year, because even though women play polo here, it's predominantly men, and they've been very, very receptive to having us fundraise that way. So I think we will get bigger with it. But as you say, if we can get a man who has a high profile to come out and say, look, I beat this, because of all the cancers, prostate cancer is the most curable if you catch it early. So we go back to the same slogan, early detection is your best protection.
But in the absence of that, what is the trend that we are seeing in Barbados among the men?
Well, we have the fifth highest death rate per capita in the world. We're just behind Trinidad by 1 point. The highest right now, the last figures that I got, is Martinique. So these are three Caribbean islands that take the first five places. At one point, we were the third highest in the world. And that's too much. About 49 women die every year of breast cancer in Barbados. 109 men die of prostate cancer in Barbados. So we really have to try and look after you men. And David's programs like this will help us, you know, to raise the awareness and get men to get over this thing of, I don't like this. I don't want to have that examination. I mean, you can have a blood test, but as we all know, the best test for prostate cancer is a manual test. And nearly 4 years ago, we donated, the Barbados Cancer Society donated a mobile ultrasound machine with a digital probe for men to go to the Queen Elizabeth Hospital and have tests done free for prostate. But I'm sorry, we got off the subject a little bit because it's really breast cancer.
Well, it's cancer
about.
In general.
Yeah.
It's cancer in general, and this is a very important statistic that you've given. Part of the problem is that this statistic is not in your face. It is not repeated with any frequency in Barbados.
Mm-hmm. No.
Dr. Cambridge?
If I may, Mr. Ellis, it's significant that when we start to speak about the men, we automatically switch to prostate cancer. But let's hasten to realize that we have several male breast cancer patients at Queen Elizabeth Hospital, and I'm sure the private oncologists see them as well. So breast cancer is a topic for the men to discuss as well, and for the men to be examining their breasts as well, and to be come forward as the face of breast cancer in Barbados as well.
You know, that's interesting. The notion of a man examining his breasts, it's not something that we feel comfortable with.
Not usually.
Yeah. But that, and that too, is part of the challenge. It is part of the challenge.
Yeah, 3 in 100 men will get breast cancer.
It's 3%.
So,
yeah.
I'm not so sure that's accurate.
Yeah, which part of it is accurate?
3 in 100 men.
In our population, you mean?
Dr. Ferdinand, what would you suggest instead?
So there was a review that I did covering the decade between 91 to 2000 and looking at the male breast cancers, all diagnosed at our single pathology lab at the time, and it was less than 1%.
Okay.
Less than 1%?
Okay. Yeah.
But that was between what period?
91 to 2000.
Okay.
I'm not aware that there's been any further analysis of the
There data. Is a need for study now.
Oh, absolutely.
A new study is necessary.
Absolutely.
But I think that
the answer
is human beings worry about our physique and our, what should I say, sensual. You know, if a man says he has prostate cancer, he thinks of, can I perform? And I think this is where education is important. And then the lady who has lost her breast, how do we look? Am I going to be lopsided if I lose the left or the right? As Dr. Lane said, the stigma of not having your breast, not having your prostate, not having an erection, not having the usual, but it remains. I think we need to educate people that although you have lost something, something makes up for it in another place. And education is so important. Like, you need to get your checks. And don't worry about what happened. Life is important. And you can still laugh. You can still do things that are alive if you have lost something, but you really, you know, God makes up for it. God makes up for it, I can tell you that.
Dr. Daniel, the experience in Canada, especially among black people in Canada, what is that like?
So in partnership with the Olive Branch of Hope Cancer Support Services here in Toronto, I've been working with them for the past 3-4 years. Excuse me. And we've been running breast cancer education and awareness workshops, and we're getting 25 to 40 women out at each of these workshops, and occasionally a husband is dragged along. And, but most of the women attending are over the age of 45, and that's been our challenge, to try and get the younger women out, because another interesting attribute of triple negative breast cancer is it actually strikes women in their young premenopausal age. So we're not getting the younger women out who are most at risk for triple negative breast cancer. We're getting more of the older women, the breast cancer survivors. And so we're trying to come up with strategies to get younger women out to our workshops. But definitely the women that have come out have learned a lot. They're understanding the language and the terminology better. They're asking better questions when they go to their physicians for checkups, for follow-ups. They're talking to their relatives, their sisters, their nieces. So the word is getting out, at least in the Toronto GTA region, that we're addressing and targeting. And so I can say that at least the women that are coming out to the workshops are interested, they're spreading the word, they're being quite assertive about this, because many of them had lost loved ones prior to us partnering, and so they're really excited that we're being really assertive and proactive now in Toronto, trying to get the word out to more black women in the Toronto region.
So you suggested that just now that the younger women are more prone to triple negative?
Yes.
Okay.
But it's not that they're more prone. Triple negative tends to strike at a younger age in young black women.
Because I have a question here which is related to something that I've heard for quite some time now. This question here is this. Is there a correlation between heightened estrogen during pregnancy and breast cancer, especially as it relates to young pregnant women? Now, there's also been this suggestion that younger women who are afflicted by cancer tend to have a greater difficulty in fighting it off, whereas older women seem to have been able to do better. And
yep.
So is that the triple negative at work here?
It could be, but it's definitely one of those phenomena that we don't understand. We don't fully understand why when younger women get diagnosed with breast cancer, they tend to have worse outcomes. Dr. Ferdinand may be able to speak to this better. But it's definitely something that we've noticed. Many, as I said, many labs around the world are tackling these problems because it's just when we think we understand it, there's some other complication or diversion, and we're like, well, that doesn't fit the norm. So then we have to do some more research to try and understand it better. So it's at the moment, I don't think anyone knows why it's more aggressive in younger women. It could be estrogen. It could be a combination of factors, and that's also what makes treating any cancer, whether it's breast or prostate, so complicated. It's not just one cause of cancer. It's multifaceted, right? You've got your genetic factors, you've got your environmental factors, whether it's smoking, drinking, even where you live.
Wait, let me get my mic.
Hello?
Yes, just I think we have two people on the line, yes.
Okay, so it's multifaceted and complex. So I don't think we can just go as well because the younger women have more estrogen than the older women. It's a lot more complex than that.
It's certainly not as simple as that. It is a well-recognized fact, nonetheless, that the disease tends to be more aggressive in all its aspects in younger women.
Mm-hmm.
I just think we haven't got the right target yet. I think we haven't been able to identify what the factor or factors are that lead to that kind of behavior. It is in the biology of the disease. We have come to recognize that breast cancer is not one disease. So identifying what specific type of disease they have is where the work has to be done.
Exactly, which is why I'm making my plug for more young Barbadian students to pursue cancer research careers.
Yeah.
Because at the end of the day as well, we need more black researchers, black scientists. We don't have enough conducting this kind of not just breast cancer research for that matter, even cardiovascular research, all these diabetes research. We need more black researchers to address and tackle these problems that are unique to people of African ancestry.
Is there enough money in it?
How do you mean money?
You know,
like
money
careers,
does...
Or as in
yeah, investment? You know, in certain careers do not attract as many people as you want because they sometimes don't consider them to be financially as attractive as going to other areas.
So I don't think that should be the driving force, but I can say that, yes, definitely being a professor, you make a good income. It's a very rewarding career. You can have an impact on thousands of millions of people, depending on the discoveries you make as a scientist and a researcher, right? I can even argue you might have more of an impact than the physician who is seeing maybe, 2,000, 3,000 patients in their lifetime. As a researcher, you might impact a million people in your lifetime. I don't think that should be the motivation. I think it should be a genuine passion and commitment to trying to solve a problem that the world needs help addressing and solving, rather than looking at the money per se. Obviously, you need to pay the bills, but most professors make a good income.
Dr. Maxwell and Mr. Ferdinand, what do you consider to be the factors that are driving people to or from this kind of research in the Caribbean?
In the Caribbean, it might just be an issue of access. Once we can have the different teachings available, if the courses can be offered at maybe University of West Indies or the scholarships be made available, then more physicians would be inclined to pursue such careers.
So scholarships would make a difference.
And funding for study to get into these fields, as well as more education for us to know that these are fields that are worthwhile going into at this time. I think a lot of young physicians are interested in going into the genetic counseling and the cancer biology. I am hearing amongst my colleagues more persons talking about these topics at this time and having the interest. We always discuss this with Deanne as well, specializing in these different areas. So I think we will see a change.
Yeah, I share that view. It's getting younger persons looking for a career to be asking the right question of themselves. What is it that I am passionate about? Mm-hmm. What is it that excites me? What is it that I want to study more of? And trying to find these opportunities to answer these questions that you have. You know, it starts off with the individual, asking themselves, what excites me? When you go through your training in medical school, you're going to see persons in different areas of medical practice,
yeah.
And somebody's going to have an impact on you. And do you want to follow that person, or do you have something
yeah.
completely different that you want a particular question answered? I have been
yeah.
encouraging some of the youngsters in the last few years to look towards oncology, to look towards research in oncology and in cancer care, because the world is going to be seeing a little bit more of that, I think, and therefore there are lots of questions to be answered.
Yeah. And we should also remember that historically, the hundreds of years ago, the first physicians, or historically physicians, were researchers. They all did research.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Right? And that's something that we've drifted away from, but there's definitely a trend to move back towards combining research with clinical practice.
Mm-hmm. Well, let me come back now to Santia Bradshaw, who's on the line with us. Santia, here is this comment. I'm hearing about what can be done for the middle and upper class, says the writer, but I am poor. I've been diagnosed. I have no money to get the required treatment. Can't afford palliative care. Can't travel to get treatment. What is available for people like me, says this person. Now, first of all, the assumption that she cannot get, I assume it's a she, can't get palliative care. Is that real, though? Based on what you said here today?
No, it's not. She contacted us.
That's right.
234-9196 immediately, and then we will go from there.
Well, palliative care shouldn't be the first step.
No. Maybe she needs counseling.
Well, you need
yes,
counseling,
probably.
First
several
of all. So to that person
yes,
who is out there adrift
yeah.
And doesn't know what to do, what's the first step?
Yeah. The first step, I would say, is when last did she speak with her physician?
Yeah.
You know, that is usually the person who is directing lots of things that are supposed to be happening to the patient.
But I know the answer I'm going to get here. I don't have enough money to go to a doctor.
Yeah, but the thing is that the hospital offers.
But we have
care.
A public healthcare system
yeah,
in Barbados that functions pretty well.
So you can say to me, these are the possible answers you get.
Lots of rumors.
Not in cancer treatment, I must say.
Okay.
The referral system is very, very quick. From the time a polyclinic physician refers to the surgeons, I know cancer patients or anybody with a suspicious lump anywhere gets a very soon appointment. They get the biopsy done quickly. They quickly come over to us, our appointments. Our appointment system is not far at all. Our consultant head of departments has been seeing more and more new patients weekly. Yes, 2 new patient days now to address that issue. So the referral system, they come through the channels very quickly, and at least to start their initial workup and to have an idea as to where we go from here, the initial counseling. So that shouldn't be an issue in our system.
Can I say something in terms
yes.
of persons believe that some places are not confidential.
Hmm.
No, we don't use names for our patients. We use numbers. So if you call us, then we will get your name in the first instance. Excuse me. But our files are made up of numbers. So I'm asking her, if she could give us a call back, as Dr. Ferdinand says, get to your polyclinic, get to your physician, get to your clergy. The clergy also refers persons to us. There's somebody in the community, I am sure, that you can speak with to get in touch with any help that you need.
Now, Ms. Bradshaw, quite a lot has been said since the start of this program when we spoke with you. What stands out in your mind from what you've heard so far?
I think, David, what's standing out is that we need to educate more, whether it is in relation to this condition or certainly other health conditions. And we have to make sure that people understand that it is only with the early detection that preventative measures can actually be taken to help persons and to treat persons. From a governmental level, I think this has been a wake-up call, certainly to my administration, in terms of what we need to do and what we need to prioritize in terms of health care. We have said throughout the entire campaign that the things that we would prioritize certainly was health and education, and that remains the commitment of the Barbados Liberal Party. But I think this has certainly made all of us more acutely aware of how we need to prioritize our resources in relation to these particular areas, and ensure that it isn't just people who have insurance that are able to access medical care, but that all Barbadians, regardless of their, you know, where they come from and their financial background, that they're also able to be provided with adequate care. Certainly as Minister of Education, I mean, I have the ability to leverage through my interaction with the medical schools that are coming to Barbados, and certainly the rest of the cabinet, you know, from time to time we speak to people in terms of asking us what it is that we need to have done or what we would like to see done in Barbados. I think this clearly is a priority area. No one should feel as though they are not able to look after their health care and to be able to take quick decisions to be able to have an extension certainly on their life.
Of course, we've been talking about a national health insurance plan. Mm-hmm. Does this fast track that?
I think that is certainly a direction that we need to go. If you leave it to most persons to prioritize healthcare who are struggling to make ends meet, it's not going to be. I think if we consider that we have to look at preventative measures as a way of cutting down overall health care bills, then that is definitely the way that we are going to have to go.
Well, I got an intervention here from Dr. Natasha Sobers, who says that she is a researcher with the Barbados National Registry for Cancer, and she wanted to clarify breast cancer as it relates to the men's statistics. She said that in 2013, only 3 men presented with breast cancer. And she points out that this national registry is funded by the Ministry of Health and managed by the University of the West Indies. However, having made the point that only 3 men did it presented with the disease in that year does not negate the point that there is a need for men to be very conscious of the fact that they can be afflicted. Of those 3, I suspect I know one of the people. When he said to me that he had come down with breast cancer, I was really shocked and really surprised about it. So let's take another call, 4341790, as we go towards our 1:15 close. Hello?
Hello?
Yes.
Good afternoon, Ms. Ellis, and your panel.
Yes, this is the last call of the day. Yes, ma'am.
Yes.
This is a caller who we know very well. Yes, ma'am.
Hello, Bill. Good afternoon. Now, we have some tests that we are done for early detection, like mammogram and pap smear, and there are also like blood tests, you know, that are available for prostate cancer. I would like to know about the C-reactive protein blood test, and how do we, the blood test for the pH level, which gives us the acidity or the alkalinity of our blood. Now, we do know that it's been said that cancer cannot survive in an alkaline environment. So how do we know what to eat to get this alkaline environment?
Yeah, this is a very important question because a lot of stuff is being said out there in the public domain that comes right back to this question. If you eat this and you drink that, you are likely not to suffer this. So who's going to take that, Selwyn Ferdinand?
Not me.
So that I don't know anywhere where C-reactive protein has been shown or used as a test for any kind of cancer. It is a test that has been used in trying to identify patients who have conditions that may be what we call inflammatory, where there is inflammation going on without being able to be specific and giving you a diagnosis as to what's causing the inflammation. With regards to pH and alkalinity, again, there is no test that tests your pH that can tell you anything about cancer.
Agreed.
Yes, agreed, but that's the other doctor in the studio. So I think that's where we're going to wrap up this discussion today. Closing comments from you, Santia Bradshaw, for taking the time and the courage to come public and to share with us in more detail what your experience has been.
Let me just say, Dennis, again, I just want to thank, you know, you for, sorry, David, for having this program, because I think this is a huge start in where we need to go forward, and for all of the panelists as well. My coming out and disclosing what I was going through was really to serve a purpose to get other people to come forward, so that they weren't afraid to say that they were also suffering, and also if they were experiencing anything suspicious, that they could also feel comfortable going forward to the doctor. So I would want to, again, continue to urge people to get to the doctor, go get tested. It doesn't just have to be a suspicious lump. You know, it's across the board, all medical conditions. You know, if you are concerned about something, get to a doctor, physician, and, you know, just ask the relevant questions.
Thank you.
Because I think that's the way to go forward.
Thank you very much, Sandra Bradshaw. Mm-hmm. And thanks also to Mr. Selwyn Ferdinand, Senior Consultant Surgeon at the QEH, Dr. Cambridge Maxwell, Registrar in the Department of Oncology and Nuclear Medicine, Leanne Sobers from the Barbados Association of Palliative Care, Ed Clark, Executive Vice President and General Manager of Barbados Operations with Sagicor Life, Mrs. Griselda Bishop, a cancer survivor, another cancer survivor, and Mrs. Angela Simpson, and to Dr. Juliet Daniel, cancer researcher, who joined us on the line from Canada. Special thanks to all of you who called and participated in this program. We hope that you found it useful and that you will be able to take this information and make it work for you in a positive way. Special thanks, of course, to Dennis Johnson, my technical operator and producer today. I'm David Ellis, and this has been Brass Tacks Sunday, brought to you in association with Williams Industries Incorporated. Do have a great afternoon.